picture a massive, impenetrable bank vault, 2-foot-thick, solid titanium doors, complex laser grids, you know, state-of-the-art retinal scanners at every checkpoint.
Oh, yeah. The ultimate fortress. Basically, a purely technical defense system built specifically to withstand, well, any amount of brute force.
Right, exactly. Nothing is getting through that perimeter without setting off every single alarm in the building.
But then a guy wearing a standard, maybe slightly faded delivery uniform walks right up to the front desk holding a clipboard.
Yeah, and he smiles warmly at the heavily armed guard, adjusts his hat, and says, "Hey there, I've got a hot pizza here for the vault manager."
And the guard smiles back, swipes his key card, and just holds that reinforced door wide open for him.
Because all the titanium and lasers in the world, well, they cannot process context. The vulnerability wasn't in the technical system at all.
No, the vulnerability was the human being operating it.
Welcome back. In this lesson, we're exploring Lesson 1.4, Phishing, Scams, and Safe Online Behavior. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
It's such a vital topic right now.
It really is. Our core mission today is to unpack exactly how cybercriminals target you through phishing messages, scams, fake websites, and online manipulation tactics. We are looking at the digital equivalent of that pizza delivery guy.
Right, and the stakes here go far beyond a minor computer glitch or, you know, an annoying pop-up ad. Falling victim to these tactics leads to severe compounding consequences.
We're talking about real damage here.
Absolutely. Stolen personal information, devastating financial loss, compromised accounts, and malware infections that can literally decimate an entire network. This is an active threat to your personal stability and your future career trajectory.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. When we hear the word cybercriminal, we usually picture, I don't know, a hacker sitting in a dark room, typing furiously, breaking through firewalls with complex code.
Sure, the classic movie trope.
Exactly. But if I am understanding the core of this lesson, you're saying these threats are actually more about tricking us into voluntarily handing over the keys.
That is the crucial shift in perspective you need to make. Let's define the actual architecture of these threats. Phishing attempts are specifically designed to trick users into revealing sensitive information.
So they aren't forcing their way in?
No, they don't break the encryption on your password. They convince you to type it into a fraudulent box for them. And online scams manipulate users through deception and false promises, like selling a fake product or a bogus investment.
Why? Okay.
Both operate entirely on deception. They bypass the digital locks by asking the person holding the key to simply open the door.
You know, understanding that mechanism actually reframes the whole concept of internet safety for me. The goal isn't to be terrified of opening your inbox.
Not at all.
The lesson emphasizes that building awareness actively improves your online safety, boosts your digital confidence, sharpens your critical thinking, and leads to responsible technology use.
Exactly. Confidence comes directly from understanding the landscape. Once you see the underlying architecture of a scam, it ceases to be this mysterious, invisible threat. It becomes a recognizable, predictable pattern.
But to spot those patterns, we have to understand the specific psychological levers being pulled.
Right.
So we are moving the conversation from what these threats are to how they actually manipulate our brains.
And this is fascinating. The core insight to grasp is that phishing targets human behavior and trust. We are biologically wired as a species to be helpful, to respect authority, and to react to social cues.
We look for uniforms, like the pizza guy.
Exactly. We respond to urgency. Scammers basically exploit the exact evolutionary traits that make us function well as a society.
They are weaponizing our own biology against us.
Yeah.
Especially our emotions. I mean, most scams rely heavily on creating an immediate sense of urgency or profound fear.
And that urgency triggers a very specific physiological response.
Oh.
When you are rushed or frightened, say, by a text claiming your bank account is being drained, your brain undergoes what psychologists call an amygdala hijack.
An amygdala hijack.
Yep.
That sounds intense.
It really is. The amygdala, which processes immediate physical threats, just takes over. It physically restricts access to the prefrontal cortex.
Wait, really?
Yes. And your prefrontal cortex is the part of your brain responsible for logic, deep analysis, and critical thinking.
Oh, wow. So it's not just a figure of speech when we say someone wasn't thinking clearly during a scam. Their brain was literally locked out of its analytical mode.
Precisely.
It's like a high-pressure salesperson trying to force you to sign a contract right this second so you don't have time to read the fine print.
Yeah.
Like, this deal expires in 2 minutes.
Or if you don't act now, a warrant will be issued for your arrest. They need you in a panic so that prefrontal cortex stays offline.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah. By manufacturing a crisis, the scammer forces you into a reactive fight-or-flight state. The urgency itself is the primary weapon. And once we recognize that biological reality, well, the countermeasure becomes incredibly obvious.
You have to manually override the biological response. Just cause. If urgency is the weapon, time is the shield.
That is beautifully put. Creating distance between the stimulus, you know, the terrifying email, and your response allows the prefrontal cortex to come back online.
So that intentional pause is where critical thinking happens.
Right. Thinking critically before sharing personal information is your ultimate defense mechanism.
Okay, so let's get practical here. In that pause, when logic returns, how do we actually analyze the threat? We know we shouldn't click unknown links, but what are we fundamentally looking for when we verify a suspicious message?
You're looking for inconsistencies between the visual display and the underlying data. Take suspicious language, for example. We often see terrible grammar or odd phrasing from what claims to be a massive professional financial institution.
Which is a huge red flag.
Yeah, and that happens because scammers are often operating at scale from regions where English isn't the primary language. Or, even more insidiously, they are intentionally using slight errors to filter out more observant targets.
Wait, they do it on purpose?
Sometimes, yes. It ensures they only spend time on the most vulnerable respondents who overlook the typos.
That is wild. What about the technical side? The links themselves? Because an email can look perfectly legitimate visually.
This is where understanding the mechanics of web architecture is vital. The text you read on the screen, the anchor text, can say absolutely anything. It can say, click here to verify your secure transaction.
But that's just text.
Exactly. But if you hover your cursor over that link without clicking, your browser reveals the actual destination URL in the corner of your screen.
And that destination URL might be a random string of letters or slight misspelling, like bankofamerica.com with an L instead of an I.
Which is a technique called typosquatting. The visual interface is designed to comfort you with familiar logos, but the underlying architecture reveals the deception.
So let me push back on this a bit. If my bank sends me an alert about fraudulent activity, my natural instinct should be urgency.
Sure, that's normal.
So how do I verify a highly sophisticated fake without becoming paranoid? Like treating every single message from my family, my bank, or my boss as a hostile threat.
It comes down to establishing a habit of out-of-band verification. You don't have to live in paranoia, you just change the channel.
Change the channel.
Right. If you receive an urgent message from a known contact or institution asking for money or sensitive data, you verify it through a completely different communication channel.
Oh, I see.
If the bank emails you, you don't click the link. You open a new browser window and type in the bank's known web address yourself. If your boss texts you urgently, you call their known phone number. You don't assume the sender is hostile, you just assume their communication channel might be compromised.
That is such a smart, practical strategy. It's a routine check, like looking both ways before crossing a one-way street. You aren't paralyzed by fear. You're just executing a smart habit that ultimately builds digital confidence.
And those warning signs and habits aren't just theoretical. They show up constantly in the everyday situations students and young professionals face.
Like the classic fake scholarship email mentioned in the lesson.
Exactly. The fake scholarship is a brilliant case study in these dynamics. A student receives a message claiming they've won a massive exclusive grant.
But of course, they have to click a link and pay a small processing fee immediately to secure the funds.
Right. The emotion there is intense excitement paired with the ticking clock. But the way to defeat it is purely analytical. The student in the case study simply stopped the emotional rush. They paused.
They looked past the excitement.
Yeah, they checked the sender's actual email domain, noticed it was a generic public address rather than an official university domain, saw the typos in the text, and refused to click the embedded link.
Now, here is where it gets really interesting for our listeners. The mechanics used to defeat that fake scholarship are identical to the threats faced every day in corporate environments, right?
100%. The context changes, but the playbook is exactly the same.
So let's translate that to the future workplace. How does a fake scholarship tactic evolve into a corporate threat?
Well, it evolves into business email compromise, or BEC. Imagine working your first big corporate job. It's 4.45 p.m. on a Friday. You get an email from the CEO.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it's urgent. They say they are stuck at an international conference, locked out of the corporate accounts, and need you to wire funds to a vendor immediately to secure a critical contract before the weekend.
The urgency of the weekend, the authority of the CEO, the fear of ruining a massive deal, it triggers the exact same amygdala hijack we discussed earlier.
And the stakes are exponentially higher here. If you comply, or if you click a link that harvests your login credentials, it isn't just your personal bank account at risk. The scammer now has valid access to the company's internal network.
And from there, they move laterally, meaning they use your trusted internal email account to send malware to the rest of the company.
Precisely. They leverage your internal standing. Your coworkers naturally trust emails coming from you. This is how ransomware spreads across entire organizations, encrypting massive databases, and causing millions of dollars in reputational and financial damage.
All stemming from one rushed click by one employee.
Yes.
So the skills you use today to protect your own bank account from a fake scholarship are the exact same skills you'll use tomorrow to protect your company's entire database. It's the exact same critical thinking muscle.
Which brings us to a broader concept of digital responsibility. Safe online behavior isn't just a personal perk. Responsible online habits actively reduce cybersecurity risks for everyone in your network.
Does this mean the burden of cybersecurity is entirely on our shoulders as individuals? I mean, we have incredibly advanced enterprise systems, right? Firewalls, endpoint detection, AI-driven spam filters.
We do, but scammers know they cannot easily beat those enterprise systems. So they route the attack through the human being sitting at the keyboard.
I get it.
Human trust is the final frontier of cybersecurity. The most sophisticated, multi-million-dollar firewall cannot stop an authorized user from voluntarily handing over their password. That is why responsible technology use is an essential modern life skill.
But, you know, while the human is the final line of defense, we don't have to rely on our brains alone. There are tools designed to help us build these safe habits.
Absolutely. We can build a defense in-depth strategy using specific tools designed to catch what our eyes might miss. Defense in-depth basically means layering your security. So if one layer fails, like if you are tired and miss a red flag, another layer catches the threat.
So let's break down some of the specific tools recommended in the source that you can adopt right now. Tools like Google Safe Browsing, VirusTotal, and Bitwarden. How do these actually support our strategy behind the scenes?
Well, let's start with Google Safe Browsing. It's an ongoing dynamic registry. It constantly crawls the web, identifying and indexing malicious websites. When you click a link, your browser checks that specific URL against Google's massive list.
And if there's a match?
It throws up a giant red warning screen, effectively intervening before your browser even loads the malicious script.
Nice. And then VirusTotal takes a slightly different approach, right? If you have a suspicious file or a link, but you aren't sure if it's safe, you can plug it into VirusTotal.
Yeah, instead of relying on one single antivirus engine, VirusTotal acts as a massive aggregator. It runs that file or link through dozens of different security engines simultaneously.
That's incredibly powerful.
It really is. It looks for behavioral patterns and known malware signatures across the entire global security industry. It gives you a consensus on whether the item is dangerous before you ever execute it on your machine.
Amazing. Then there is Bitwarden, which is a password manager. We usually think of password managers just as a convenience tool so we don't have to remember 50 different complex passwords.
Yeah.
But it's actually a vital security tool against phishing.
This goes right back to our discussion about type squatting. Your human eyes might look at a banking login page and see the correct logo, the correct fonts, the correct colors, but a password manager does not have eyes.
It reads the underlying code.
Exactly. It reads the underlying cryptographic URL. If the URL is even one character off from the legitimate site you saved, the password manager will simply refuse to autofill your credentials. It recognizes the structural mismatch, stepping in perfectly when visual deception succeeds.
Do these tools replace the need for critical thinking, though?
Mm.
If Bitwarden and these other tools are so effective, why can't we just rely on software 100% of the time?
The short answer is no. They don't replace critical thinking. Software operates strictly on rules and known signatures. Scammers are constantly innovating, registering brand new domains, launching zero-day attacks.
And using social engineering tactics that don't rely on malicious code at all.
Exactly. An attacker asking you to buy thousands of dollars in gift cards over the phone doesn't trigger an antivirus scan. Tools are a safety net. They automate the baseline defense, buying you time. But your brain's ability to analyze context, recognize manipulation, and question authority is the primary security system.
So we completely transform our relationship with the digital world. We move from being a passive user hoping the software saves us to an active, confident participant managing our digital environment.
Synthesizing these elements is critical. Phishing targets human trust. Scams manufacture urgency and fear to shut down your logic center.
But critical thinking, combined with automated tools and responsible habits, forms an impenetrable defense.
Absolutely.
Let's use the lessons knowledge check questions as a final reflective exercise for you to ponder right now. Ask yourself, what really is phishing fundamentally? Why do scams specifically try to make you panic? And most importantly, how will you identify suspicious messages moving forward?
And just remember, in a landscape of constant digital manipulation, your adaptability and your digital confidence are going to be your most valuable career assets. Technical skills will change, software will update, but the ability to pause, analyze, and safely navigate complex environments will never become obsolete.
And as we look to the future, that critical thinking muscle is only going to become more vital. I mean, think about it. If scammers can bypass our logic today with a typo-ridden email or a fake delivery uniform, what happens tomorrow when AI allows them to generate a flawless deepfake video of your boss on a Zoom call?
Or clone your family member's voice perfectly on a frantic voicemail.
Exactly. When the visual and audio clues are completely indistinguishable from reality, your ability to question the context, recognize the urgency, and execute out-of-band verification is going to be the only thing standing between you and a massive breach.
The technology of deception will continue to evolve rapidly. But the fundamental human defense, you know, questioning the nature of the request and taking that vital pause, remains exactly the same.
That is an incredibly empowering thought to hold on to as we wrap up. Keep that critical thinking shield raised. I encourage you to stay curious, remain responsible, and keep making yourself future ready. Please make sure to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities.
And for those who want to explore the psychology, history, and scale of these threats even further, we highly recommend checking out the reference materials for this module. Titles like The Art of Deception by Kevin Mitnick, published in 2002, Future Crimes by Mark Goodman from 2015, and Cybersecurity and Cyberwar by P.W. Singer and Alan Friedman, published in 2014. They provide phenomenal context on these challenges. Thank you so much for your time and focus today.
Thank you for joining us. Stay safe, stay curious, and we will see you next time on The Deep Dive.